You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Remembers what time zone we're in, so I'm not going to say his name, but if he shows up, we have a guest. But I'm Kelly. Joining me as always is Annie. Howdy, Annie.
Hello.
And I guess Mom and Dad left us home with all these sharp objects in the fire, so hey,
yeah,
it's out of the pocket.
Sure what they were thinking.
I don't know, but it's Victory Monday.
It is a Victory Monday, and that is fantastic.
So the revenge tour continues, and the Green Bay Packers are 4-0. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm pretty stoked about it. I mean, you know, who knows? I think McCarthy does a pretty good job of keeping them on task in terms of, you know, one game at a time and so on and so forth. But you can't deny the fact that Seattle and the Niners, I mean, these are teams that we've really struggled with in the last couple of years. Whether that is just Seattle being real good at things or the Niners with their annoying option play with Kaepernick that seems to befuddle us. It was really, really great to see what they do on the field on Sunday. So, yeah, no, that was really exciting. And I'm actually going to bring our guest in now. So are you ready?
Hey, we have a guest. He remembered what time zone we were in. So joining us
he
tonight
did.
Because Mom and Dad are gone, we've stolen him from his show because we stole Jay from his show, so we steal him too. Bring it up, give it up for Jason Perrone from Cheesehead TV. And Jason, what show do you guys do that's actually the show we're stealing you from?
Pulse of the Pack.
Okay, because I wanted to say No Huddle Radio, but I'm like, it's not right. So Pulse of the Pack at the Packers Talk Network. So thank you for filling in because we lost half our crew.
No problem. I'm sorry. I was tending to one of the world's youngest Packers fans. You know how that goes, so I apologize for my tardiness. I'm definitely not on Lombardi time tonight.
Don't worry about it, because I'm waiting for one of mine to barge in. So, hey, we just started talking about the revenge tour. What are your initial thoughts of, you know, marking the 49ers off the list of teams that we have to finally beat?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was a great game. You know, you say what you want, the whole narrative about the Niners not being what they've been and how the team has changed. I mean, think about this. The first half, the Packers did the whole 2011 thing. They played down to the level of their opponent. It was only 7-3 at halftime. And then, you know, they were able to pull away a little bit in the second half. But still so good to see all of the culminating elements come to fruition. The Packers got the win. They finally shut down Colin Kaepernick. He got scared. I think he wet himself at one point during the second half. Clay gets the big sack. He mocks the bicep. It's like, you know what? They got the 49ers got their what was coming to them all day yesterday, and couldn't have been happier. It's fantastic. And, you know, McCarthy talks about the season in terms of quarters. I don't know, ladies. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it gets any better than 4-0, does it?
I don't think we've been 4-0 like since 2011.
Yeah.
So it feels mighty fine. But yeah, I think it's great that we knocked Colin Kaepernick down a notch. Yes, I think you can say, is he really that crappy? I think the answer is yes. But he was a thorn in their side, and he's been so since he showed up in the NFL. And I was really pleased that we finally were able to understand the read option. And I'm going to throw this around the horn. I don't know if it's me, but has the read option lost its shine across the NFL and everyone's caught on to two people like Kaepernick and Russell Wilson, and even when he was playing RG3? So I'll start with Jason.
I mean, I don't think it's completely gone. I mean, it's, you know, defenses are aware of it now. It's not catching everybody off guard like it did in 2012, and no team was caught off guard worse than the Packers in the wild or the divisional playoffs. I heard that a state trooper actually had to pull this gentleman who was running down the freeway away from the road due to safety reasons earlier today. It turns out it was Eric Walden. He's still looking for Colin Kaepernick from 2012. So crazy, running down the interstate there. So, you know, good luck getting there, Eric Walden, and don't stop to argue with your girlfriend or your wife on the way. So, no, I mean it's still there in pieces. I mean, defenses aren't going to be totally fooled by it, and even the Packers. You know, it was nice to see Capers kind of adjust because, you know, not to derail the conversation here, but who else was like ready to punch a hole through the wall after that first Kaepernick run for 12 yards. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. 3 years later and this is it. Like, you know, Aaron Nagler, our founder over at Cheesehead TV said something that was very true. He said, if the Packers can't figure out how to stop Kaepernick finally this week, they never will. And it looked like he was once again going to have a field day running all over them. But, you know, I mean, I still think you'll see it in bits and pieces. Offensive coordinators will check for little holes in the defense and look for opportunities where they can have the quarterback pull it in and run. But you got to have the right kind of guy. You know, you got to have that Russell Wilson or Colin Kaepernick type. Although, according to Clay Matthews, Colin Kaepernick ain't no Russell Wilson. So I guess
Wilson ain't no Russell Wilson lately.
That's right. So I mean, now I don't think it'll go away completely, but it's not the huge juggernaut that I think it was when we first saw it.
So Annie, your thoughts on this?
I mean, I have to agree. You know, I was feeling very similarly to everybody else who has any awareness of what we've been facing with this read option over the last few years. And, you know, to look at it and go, are you kidding me? This guy has been getting buried lately by teams who've been able to figure him out. And, you know, they've scored nothing the last few weeks. And here he is running all over us again. And he had a few runs in the first half. I'm going, oh, my gosh, you know, we're going in. It's 7-3, 2.5, and I mean, are you kidding me right now? I mean, these guys are not good. Like, they're not cohesive. You know, they're a hot mess with their new coach and, like, all of this, you know, losing a bunch of players and things like that. And here we are. We're slated to be one of the best teams in the league. We've proven that we're one of the best teams in the league, or so far anyway. And here we are not able to figure this stuff out. And it was driving me crazy. But like Jason said, I think that the adjustments that they made at halftime just, you know, demonstrated that while I find it hard to believe that it was like halftime where Capers went, ding, 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 I think I figured it out. But that's kind of what it seemed like the first half we were just like, nah, kind of giving into the hype around the game and the revenge tour and everything. And then finally in the second half we can pull it together and we're able to start to shut down that read option and limit Kaepernick. Because I think he's just really – really one-dimensional. He's got an arm, but I think that our corners can take care of that, our safeties can take care of that in terms of their coverage. It's, you know, it's that read option that we had to really handle, and I feel like we did that in the second half.
And I think that, I don't know if he's necessarily regressed. Part of me thinks yes, but I think we've really finally figured him out. God almighty, it took 3 years to read his body language. Watching on TV, he has definitely a different posture when he's going to hang on to the ball and run. He kind of extends his arms down. It's different than pulling it into himself if he's going to hand it off. It took them 3 years to figure that out. Good God. You know, again, did he regress? I'm not really certain. But if you neutralize his read option, he suddenly becomes a very crappy aerial passer. So I don't know. He's definitely got a strong arm. He doesn't have an accurate arm. And I think he ran scared, which I think is awesome. I just wish I could hear him go, ah, as Clay Matthews was running at him. But he threw a lifetime to South America. And the fact that he wet himself, I think that's totally awesome. So he actually scored since we're talking about controversial things, Pro Football Focus, not to trash an organization, but their black box metrics on quarterbacks. Okay, to put it in perspective, Aaron Rodgers initially, after they revised it, i.e. walked it back several times last week, scored a negative 0.8 for 5 touchdowns, 300-some yards, and 0 interceptions. Colin Kaepernick scored a negative 5.2 yesterday, so that makes sense. He didn't have a good game. He had an interception. He threw a lot of crap. And Aaron Rodgers had a plus 4.9. So I know we've talked about this on Twitter. I'm going to start with you, Annie. It seemed like this game wasn't as clean as the game last week, yet he scored vastly higher. What's your take on the PFF scores?
First of all, clearly based on their score last week, I do not even understand what they mean. Like, I know that they talk about, okay, it's more like situational stuff. It's not just stat line. You know, it has more to do with like certain things. I don't really understand that, but the fact that they're walking them back last week kind of tells me that they don't even know their own system. And I'm not like I follow them. I've always enjoyed their comments and their thoughts and their, you know, all of those things. But the scoring system just feels really odd to me, kind of as pointless as the QBR rating with ESPN almost. So I don't know. I guess I don't have a lot to say about it because I'm not super familiar with what the scores even mean or what the metrics really are. I don't know, Jason, if you have a better understanding of it or why they gave him that score this week. But
I don't really have a better understanding of it because I've never really been a big proponent of Pro Football Focus by itself. I think it has value in certain ways if you want to just quick glance and get an overall picture of how a player performed. Like I really didn't even use them last year. You know, we have the subscription Al gives us and we can use it as we write. And it's not that I don't want to be informed, but I'll look at it like maybe from a whole season's perspective. Cause I think if you look at a bigger sample size, you might get a better idea of what a player's true grade is. But, you know, and then to further solidify my non-belief in them as a pure metric, you know, all of a sudden there's backlash last week after Rodgers gets that low score against the Chiefs, and then they walk it back and they change his rating. I mean, it wasn't a huge change, but they went in and updated it, and it's like, well, you know, you kind of got to own it, don't you? You kind of have to own your system. You have to own your standard. And so how can I trust that you're grading players and holding your integrity if you're going to go back and you're going to cave into the pressure from the masses and go in and update somebody's ranking? And, you know, that either tells me that you're easily swayed or that your system is flawed. So I don't totally, you know, I know there was an article written about why Rodgers scored the way he did, and, you know, God bless them for trying to justify it. I mean, I don't know, you throw 5 touchdowns and no interceptions. I'd like to at least think you're in the positive. But, you know, they, like I said, I think there's a lot that goes into their grading that you have to kind of understand, and you know, I don't totally understand it. I think this just kind of further solidified me as, you know, I'm kind of more of an eyeball test kind of guy. If I really want to know how a player did, I'll go back and watch the game again. I'll rewind certain parts. I'll look at the All-22 film. I just think there's more to be gained there than at Pro Football Focus, you know, overall. I think, you know, you can use them as kind of one portion of the picture, but obviously this kind of very well illustrated. They're not the end all be all when it comes to grading players and how a player actually did on the field.
Well, I was definitely more unforgiving than other people, and my brother wrote a pretty good article and got just filleted for trying to quantitate their metric. So I wrote about something as well after the springboard from something he said. Trying to figure out why, you know, a performance like last week was, you know, worth negative points, and now compared to kind of a messy game where he got almost 5 points. So I went and looked at how they score, and it's very subjective. They're looking for a wow factor. So there's almost style points involved, which is kind of ridiculous because there are no style points in football. So things that were, you know, big plays in quotes or tough plays, if you complete that, you get more points than just an easy, you know, 5 yards, you know, to the out, you know, to the in and out to the end zone type play, which is considered low risk for them. They really reward the high risk plays. And you look at this week, you know, Rodgers had more high-risk, kind of pulling it out of his butt-type throws. But they penalize things that they think should have been intercepted or weren't a risk. So that's why I think he scored so low last week. But that begs the question, is this is a metric that isn't really geared towards Aaron Rodgers. If you look at him, he's like an actuary. He really does assess, and this is, I think, where the mental game comes in. He really does assess the risk-to-benefit ratio. Is he going to thread the needle and risk an interception like Brett Favre did all the time? Probably not. But on the flip side, he doesn't take risks because he doesn't have to because he's that accurate. So, yes, he looks a little – he makes the extraordinary look pedestrian at times. But then you've got people trying looking for the wow factor to give him style points, and they can't because he's not going to just pull it out of his butt and throw it and hope somebody catches it. He's unlike like a Joe Flacco, which I always joke they won Super Bowl playing a game of 500, or Favre is going to be much more calculated on where he places the ball, and I think he got penalized for it because people think he's boring.
Well, and if I can jump in here too, I mean, based on your description of their scoring process, they would have, I mean, can you even like imagine what Brett Favre would have gotten for a score if style points are what matter and what if tossing it in the air and hoping to God that somebody comes down with it that's not on the opposite team. I mean, come on, Aaron Rodgers is a surgeon. And, you know, he's picking people apart. Now, granted, he did have that fumble last week, and he had an almost interception. So, yeah, if you're going to look at those pieces, sure. But you have to think that as far as last week is concerned, and they changed it twice. They didn't just change it once. They changed it twice. And, you know, as far as last week is concerned, I mean, yeah, he had the, you know, a couple of bloopers, but to say that five touchdowns and no interceptions in the end is going to garner you a negative rating, it just makes me not.
Well, they penalize you even if it's in, if it's a garbage play, it's a free play. If you didn't catch it, even though that's where Rodgers is going to take more risk. If you don't catch it, the quarterback still gets penalized for it, which just is a ridiculous metric, which makes me think it's, you know, it's about as accurate as a drunk kid in the dirt board.
I just think, you know, the other thing too, the other thing with the whole thing is that they make up these kind of arbitrary metrics that are hard to define. And so if you're going to do something statistical or mathematical, there has to be some scientific rationale to it. If you're going to throw these objective, you know, or subjective, whichever one it is that I'm looking for, where there's
subjective.
Thank you. Obviously need to go back to class. Then there's too much left open to interpretation. And then, you know, so that's another reason why I don't, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it. And I just figure, you know, if you want to make judgment calls and you want to kind of formulate an opinion on what was risky, what wasn't risky, and some of those other factors, then just go watch the tape again.
Well, where I lost a lot of respect was here. Click here for our explanation. It might, like I said last week, it might as well have said free beer. It was just clickbait at that point. So enough about silly stats and Aaron Rodgers. We'll go back to Aaron if we have some time. Let's talk about what didn't go well on the offense. And if you could, I think we can all name one person who really struggled yesterday. I think it would be Don Barkley. Does anyone disagree?
Agree.
No. Yeah.
I didn't even look up his PFF number because I'm sure it was in the tank. But he really struggled, and he was definitely the worst thing on the team, I thought. Rodgers had been sacked 3 times in the first 3 games. He was sacked 3 times yesterday.
Yeah, he got sacked so, 3 times yesterday. He was sacked 3 times yesterday, and coming into the game, I think he'd only been sacked 3 times all season, right?
Exactly. So we doubled the amount of sacks in one game. And if you look at it, everybody exploited Barkley. I thought where in games past where David Bakhtiari struggled, I think he held his own, but they just rushed to the, on the right. You know, they just attacked from the right this time, and it just collapsed time after time. And I don't have the stat in front of me. I don't remember how many times he was knocked down, but they got to him more times than I would like. So I'm going to throw it around the horn. I got some questions about Barkley. What can they do to improve other than Brian Bulaga getting better? So, Jason.
Well, so this is one of those my neighbor's friends, dentist, dog, sitter's mother stories. But, you know, obviously I've lived in Wisconsin for a long time, and I have a lot of friends that live near the Green Bay area, and a lot of them actually end up having some, you know, other friends and sources near the team that end up actually sharing some pretty good nuggets. And I heard from one of them today that it sounds like Bulaga might come back a little bit sooner than expected. Now, nothing's been written on that. It didn't come from any source that covers the team, but obviously that was not the worst thing to hear, even if it is just a fallacy, because Don Barkley just looked bad. And there's a couple things going on here that I try to keep in mind and keep a perspective on before just kind of throwing a guy to the wolves. I mean, I wrote game balls and lame calls on Cheesehead TV. It went up this morning. Barkley was the only player that got a lame call from yesterday. It was the second week in a row where I was kind of scratching my head like, well, who am I going to give lame calls to, because they weren't really that bad. But he's playing tackle. He's not really a tackle. I think we've kind of established that in a perfect world, the Packers keep Barkley on the roster for interior depth. So he's better off as a guard, maybe even at center, although he looked horrible at center in preseason this year at the few snaps that he took there. But, you know, he's more of a guard, and so having to throw him at tackle is kind of a last-ditch effort to try to keep the line together. And he played there all of 2013 when Bulaga tore his ACL. So it's not like he hasn't played with these guys before and doesn't understand the offense, but he's kind of out of place. We knew that in the Pittsburgh preseason game. He looked terrible, although that was left tackle. I mean, defenses are, you know, these guys are good. They're fast. You know, having to keep up with these offenses, you've got really fast defensive ends and outside linebackers. So, unfortunately, there is no easy week on the schedule. And if you think about the last couple weeks, you know, the 49ers, they're not the best team in the world, but I think a lot of their issues are really more kind of on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense isn't horrible. You know, we saw Aaron Lynch just absolutely light Barkley up. Aaron Lynch isn't bad. He's actually a pretty good player. And then you've got guys that are coming in. I mean, teams know that Barkley's there. So they're going to scheme and work ways to kind of try to find the path of least resistance. And I think we all can agree it's Barkley. So, you know, the Packers just have to get smart. They're going to roll with him. I don't see them making a change. They don't just make change for the sake of changing, but they do have to change up. They have to work a little bit on the scheme. They got to get some help for him on the right hand side. They finally started putting Richard Rodgers at that H back in the backfield, kind of chipping there, and I think that helped a little bit. I mean, it's just real simple. I mean, you're either going to have to chip somebody and throw some help on the right hand side, whether the defense knows it's coming or not, or you're just going to have to design rollouts left on every single snap for Aaron Rodgers so he doesn't get his head taken off. But we're about into the fourth. This is the fourth week. So we'd like to think that Bulaga might come back maybe against the San Diego Chargers. If not, we'll definitely see him after the bye.
Definitely, I hope so. So, Annie, any thoughts? Would you move people around? Would you keep Bulaga where he is? Would you try J.C. Treader?
No, I think at this point, you know, Barkley has done kind of a serviceable job, kind of. Like Jason mentioned, you know, we've played some pretty formidable defenses. They're good, they're quick, and although the Niners have had their issues on the offensive side, they are still a fairly solid defense. So I think that, and yes, we're on our revenge tour, and so if you look at who we've played, for the most part, it's been teams with some pretty solid defenses. So to a point, you have to think, okay, well, obviously Barkley is a backup. He's playing for Bulaga right now. And I saw the same thing you did, Jason, unless you actually wrote it. I saw it coming across Twitter that, you know, Bulaga might be back a little bit sooner than expected, which would be fantastic. And, you know, so I think that you just keep the cohesive team as it is right now. And like Jason mentioned, you pull some people who can help out. It's unfortunate because it kind of takes, you know, somebody away from potentially being able to be elsewhere, you know, in terms of the offense. But, hey, you know, if he needs a little bit of help and it's going to save our franchise quarterback, and I think it's just something that you have to do. So, but I would not be a proponent of just pulling in and trying somebody else at this point. Because I think when it comes to the offensive line, it's more important at this point to keep the crew together rather than trying to change it up in terms of replacing them.
One thing I noticed was John Boone got a lot more play this week, and was that because he was, you know, also shoring up the line a little bit, I think, possibly. But what was nice is everyone thought he was going to be going out there to just be, just block. You know, you saw Mike McCarthy pulled out his clipboard, and suddenly he was play calling, and, oh, surprise, it went to John Kuhn, and he scored. Where, you know, I think we all expected him to just, you know, be door wedge for the offensive line, but I thought it was kind of refreshing that everyone else thought that, and then he managed to squeak into the end zone with Eddie Lacy being a decoy. So I don't know. I worry that when you have an anemic line and you have to use a fullback or a tight end to help it, then you're losing a potential target. At least we had plan B that now that you have them out there, that could they be utilized. Anyone else have any thoughts on John Kuhn?
Well, I thought it was really fun to see him do things. I mean, shoot, it's been a while since we've really seen him that involved in the offense in terms of at least, you know, scoring opportunities. So I'm actually, like, looking at the line, and I see him running. I'm like, is that seriously Kuhn? Like, what? So I thought it was really fun to see him out there.
We really haven't seen him.
No, we haven't. Maybe some blocking and some plays here and there, but no, we really haven't seen him all that much in terms of actual, you know, offense, scoring opportunities, things like that, more like, you know, special teams and such. So no, I really enjoyed that. I did not notice that McCarthy had the clipboard, but I guess it doesn't really surprise me because he's been known to go to Kuhn in the past. So I thought it was a lot of fun to see him out there. I enjoyed that a lot. And he actually had a running play too. Besides just that scoring play, he went out there and ran, I think it was, you know, 7-8 yards on another play as well. So, no, that was fun to see.
So, Jason, any thoughts on Kuhn?
Yeah, you know, not to pick nits here, but, yeah, Kuhn actually, that was an outlet pass. But, you know, that went for 7 or 8 yards. And that play,
okay, thank you.
That play I did like. No, I liked it. I mean, I think, hey, you know what, he's still a valuable piece here. I think Kuhn might be the answer to some of these blocking issues, and I'm like thinking to myself, well, this is why they kept 30 on the roster, was for, you know, emergency contingency plan purposes, because, you know, if the worst thing in the world happens, which, you know, one of your tackles going down is kind of that, you need some backup, and Aaron Ripkowski's not ready to take that on yet. I mean, he's still learning special teams and the offense, and he's not quite ready, although he's, you know, played some snaps and looks good. But, okay, so did anybody kind of, like, catch here the dive to Kuhn? I mean, Rodgers has the authority at the line of scrimmage to kind of change the play, and maybe he made a last-minute decision, like, hey, I'm going to try to throw the defense off here, and we're going to run this dive to Kuhn. I think, honestly, what they were trying to do, you know, I'm a little late in getting my annual physical this year, so I think Aaron Rodgers is like, well, we need to test Jason's heart here. So let's give the ball to John Kuhn on the goal. 1 yard left, and let's see if he survives. Let's see if he can survive this whole thing. Let's see if he ends up in the in the emergency room or not. So, I mean, Mike McCarthy says he's not calling the plays anymore. But is there any more Mike McCarthy-esque call than handing the ball to John Kuhn at the goal line? I just I saw that, and immediately, and I know you ladies will appreciate this one. I saw that. And I immediately thought of that scene from Major League where Willie Mays Hayes makes the basket catch in the outfield. He comes back to the dugout, and the manager Lou says, "Nice catch, Hayes. Don't ever frickin' do it again." I just
exactly.
I thought I posted that clip on Twitter, and no one responded to it. I was so disappointed. I almost
I didn't see it. I was at work. I must have timed it wrong because that's exactly what happened.
And then somebody on my timeline said the same thing. Nice play. Don't ever do it again. I just, you know, it worked. So, yeah, it's easy to say, okay, you know, it was good. They threw the defense off. And you do have to keep defenses guessing. I mean, you get down to the goal line, you put Eddie Lacy in there, defense is going to key on 27. You know, so if he starts kind of splitting out wide like it's going to be a toss or something like that, that's fine. But, I mean, it was that quick little handoff to Kuhn, and then he had to muscle his way in. And I'm like, gosh, you know, it's fine if it works out. Everyone's going to forget about this in another week. But if he didn't get in, and this game somehow came down to the end and the Packers had to squeak another one out, like we'd still be harping on the play calling and there would just be another dumpster fire of conversation. But I like Kuhn, but for the right reason. So, you know, Andy, to your point, yeah, I mean, that next play was great. That's perfect. You know, throw a little outlet to him because he's not going to fumble. He takes care of the football. He gets the tough yards. But, God, we got to give up that one-yard dive attempt into the end zone.
But I totally fell for it. You know, years ago, I'd be like, give it to Kuhn. We all know who it's going to. I totally fell for it. My eyes went to Lacy, and I'm like, wait, the ball, he doesn't have the ball? Where's the ball?
Yeah, that was me too. And I have to disagree with you, Jason. I feel like a more McCarthy-esque play is that beautiful third and one bomb down the field
yeah.
where all of a sudden we're freaking chasing fourth
yeah.
down because McCarthy is like, or you never know if Aaron Rodgers audible, but come on. I mean, McCarthy freaking loves that. Oh, let's fool them. Let's throw it down the field. No, John Kuhn is a favorite of his, so I guess I wouldn't be surprised if he called that play. So.
And maybe this is why we're all so refreshed that McCarthy gave up day-to-day play calling, because I think the greatest example was that 2010 playoff game, or was it the end of the season? That game against the Giants at the end of the season in the Super Bowl run. I was at the game. It was the regular season. Never mind. And it would be third and whatever, and the entire stadium would be calling for Kuhn. The entire stadium knew what the play was going to be, and at least now nobody knows. Because if all 78,000 people watching the game are calling the play, you know the defense has it figured out too. So let's talk about best and worst. So I'm going to throw it to Jason first. Who do you think was the best offensive player, and who do you think was the worst offensive player? Ready, set, go.
Well, worst offensive player, I think we're all going to agree on this one if we can include linemen on it. I mean, we have to go back to Don Barclay because he had a terrible day. I mean, the offensive line as a whole didn't play very well. Sitton had a penalty, which he never does. Bakhtiari still dealing with the knee issue. You know what I love about Bakhtiari? And you know, here's Mr. Bunny Trail going off again here. I love every time he gets called for a penalty, it's the most obvious penalty on the planet. He always looks so disgusted and shocked that he's getting flagged.
Lousy liar. I want to clean up on poker against him. It's like, oh, yeah, you definitely have a handful of crap.
He just – and then the hair and the eyes, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, you're such a drama guy. Anyway, I'm going to go with Don Barclay as worst. And then, you know, it's funny. I guess I wasn't totally prepared for the question, but I've even been thinking about this all day today, and I'm like, so who was the best offensive player yesterday? It's like, do you go with James Jones just simply based on that one amazing catch on the sideline that he had? Because that catch came midway through the third quarter, and they hadn't quite put their stamp on the game yet, and so that was kind of a critical play. And, I mean, I give Rodgers credit for getting rid of the ball and throwing it up there, but, I mean, that ball was up for grabs. James Jones really kind of had to make the play on it. But I'm going to actually go with Randall Cobb. Because there were a couple plays that people don't know about and they probably aren't going to talk about because all, you know, when you look at watch the game as a fan, you're kind of watching the ball and you're talking about the plays that were made. You know, and Cobb had a couple of really nice catches, but he's playing through that shoulder and it was a long catch and run. I want to say it was either James Jones or Ty Montgomery, and actually that's kind of a dumb thing to say because who else would it have been if it wasn't one of those two? But they're running down the field, and Randall Cobb comes out of nowhere and throws a really nice shoulder block with his bum shoulder into the defender and actually helps the ball carrier pick up another couple of yards, which –
Oh, that
you know,
was definitely a quality block.
Yeah, it was. And obviously I'm like, okay, well, he wouldn't be out there doing that if his shoulder wasn't able to take it. And, you know, then he got kind of taken down in the back of the end zone on that throw by Rodgers, and then his arm was hanging limp there. And, you know, like, Kel, I almost tweeted you and just said, okay, what's going on? What's happening here? Why? What's with the noodle arm? What is it? What is the medical term for noodle arm? And
noodle arms.
Yeah, right. And then
what my daughter has, they're called noodle arms.
Right. So another play later, he comes back out. I mean, you know, he knows this team needs him, and obviously he's not going to play if he can't. But with Cobb out there, he's not your outside Jordy Nelson shot play down the field. You know, one of the reasons why, anyway, we don't see that McCarthy-esque long play on third and one is because we don't have Jordy Nelson. Jordy Nelson ran that play. And so they don't have the guy that can go downfield. Adams is hurt. Ty Montgomery's not quite ready. If he was ready, he'd hung on to that first pass from Rodgers yesterday, which I still can't get over.
Now, did anyone else notice Rodgers chewing butt after that?
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised he didn't grind his teeth down to nothing, because when that kind of stuff grinds his ears worse than anything. And, you know, Rodgers yesterday, you know, he was frustrated. I mean, he definitely has some very high expectations for this offense. I think he's going to have to kind of self-talk a little bit and come to terms with the fact that, hey, this isn't Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson and Donald Driver. And, you know, you've got some young guys out there, and he's just going to have to be patient. And fortunately, they're still winning and they're having success. But, you know, hopefully he can kind of find his way with some of these guys, because he's going to have to roll with them at least until Adams comes back.
Well, I think that was definitely a rookie mistake. And you could totally see Rodgers resisting. They were totally going into chew butt mode, but he was definitely chewing them out. And then he was, you know, you saw him on the sideline dropping the F-bomb going, what the F? It did frustrate him. But I think overall Montgomery isn't that bad. I expect to see some rookie drops here and there. And I think hopefully over the course of the season they'll get less and less. What's fortunate is Rodgers trusts him already. I think if he didn't trust him, he'd be going around him like he always does. Like, you don't see a whole lot going to Jeff Gann, because I don't think he's earned Aaron Rodgers' trust quite yet. But, yeah, I think as we head towards winter and the ball gets harder as a rock and it gets cold, Montgomery's going to have to catch those. So, Annie, what's your opinion on the offense, good, bad, and ugly?
Well, I mean, you have to kind of agree with Jason in terms of Don Barkley. I mean, when you have to pull another player just to help somebody out, you know, you're kind of makes the whole offense not, you know, less good, if that's the correct grammar, all around, because you're having to put resources, you know, somewhere that other they could otherwise be used. And so I think that really affected the offense's ability. And so, yeah, I have to agree on Don Barkley. I mean, Ty Montgomery was fine. I actually missed that first catch that he missed. I probably would have been screaming at the television if I hadn't. I came into the game, I think, at like 14:50 or something, and so I just missed it. And, you know, but in the end, I think that for the most part, the rest of the offense did fine in terms of blocking. Like Jason mentioned, Randall Cobb's amazing block. I think that the running backs have been doing a good job with their blocking schemes as well. And they have to, because, you know, the offensive line hasn't been up to par in terms of keeping Aaron Rodgers protected. But I think James Jones really did turn the game with that particular catch that he made. And so to me, when you make a play that impacts the game as significantly as that play that James Jones made. And maybe it's just more an overall excitement and shock and awe over what he's done since he came back to the Packers, to step in and be such a leader and to be still so dang good at catching that ball. Even, I mean, I think he's playing some of his best football. And so to me, that play in particular just points to the fact that, you know, he is in it to win it. He's committed. And, it's hard to not say Aaron Rodgers was the best, but I think James Jones with that game-changing catch really, really sealed the deal for me.
Now, he may not be Jordy Nelson, but if Nelson had been in the game, that's the type of pass that would have gone to Nelson to keep that drive alive. So exactly. It may not necessarily be the same skill set, but it shows me that when their back's against the wall, Aaron Rodgers does want to go to the old guard veteran. And think of where we would be if we didn't have James Jones right now. We're down, you know, Devontae Adams, hopefully he comes back sooner versus later. All they say is he has an ankle. My guess is it's a high ankle sprain because he's been out for, you know, a while. But, yeah, James Jones has definitely been what we needed desperately, and he's definitely playing much differently than when he was a Packer the first time. I think he's really playing inspired football right now, and I think it's really refreshing to have him back. So,
well, and I also think in terms of James Jones, I think that he realized when he came this time, I think that he recognized the expectation this time versus last time. You know, that, hey, we're bringing you in not as a supplement to these other, you know, to Jennings and to Jordy and things like that. And you are coming to this team as somebody, you know, we have great expectations for in terms of being able to truly fill in, truly be a leader within the wide receivers and to make those big plays. That is the expectation. We don't have Jordy. We don't have Greg Jennings. We don't have those big play guys right now because of injuries and such and because of the youth of the team. But I feel like James Jones seems to have recognized the fact that the expectations on him are different than they were the first time.
Almost definitely. And I think he's definitely putting the team on his back, which he never had to do in the past. Because, you know, he was like third on the depth chart usually when, you know, the last time he was here. But he's also playing, I wonder, even though we've only signed him to a one-year deal and chances are he'll be gone, but I wonder if he's playing to impress the stay. And what do you think about that, Jason? Am I off on that, or is that just me liking him enough that I hope he stays around?
He's 31. So we all know how we get with regards to player age and how there's a different level of old in the NFL than there is in real life. So, you know, he's 31 years old, but if he's going to play at this level this year, I mean, he's a great pro. He takes care of himself. He's a good locker room guy. He fits in well with the offense. He was the Raiders' leading receiver last year. He was the number one guy. You know, he had to help some of those younger guys come up. And I'm really surprised. I mean, you know, we keep talking and you keep hearing about how, oh, two teams cut this guy. How could that have happened? And it's like, you know, I mean, come on, let's be honest. In Oakland and in New York, it's not Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. You had Derek Carr, who's a good option, and I'm surprised that maybe they didn't keep Jones there to show Amari Cooper the ropes, although Cooper seems to be doing fine on his own already.
Because he was 108 in receiver years, that's why.
108 receiver years, right, exactly. It's like dog years for wide receivers. And then, you know, I mean, we need not talk about the quarterback in New York at all and spend another minute on that. So, you know, yeah. I mean, bring him back. Bring him back next year, absolutely. And he'll come back. And the thing is the Packers, you know, they're going to have some decisions to make because a lot of young guys, not just James Jones, but you got, you know, Nick Perry deciding to show up and play. Casey Hayward's deal is due. Jayron Elliott's probably only on a one-year deal. Mike Neal, some of these guys, like all these contracts are going to come due at the end of this season. And if it ends the way that we hope it does, there's going to be a lot of teams coming after these players. And James Jones is definitely going to be one of them. I mean, he, you know, very patient, waited for his payday, ended up getting a similar deal with the Raiders that he got with the Packers the first time in free agency. But, I mean, I think he's got a chance to earn some money if the Packers aren't willing to throw it to him. And if Nelson's going to come back next year, and if Adam stays healthy, I have a feeling that, you know, Jones is probably going to get, you know, they'll offer him the veteran minimum to stick around. But if they like Jared Aberderis, then, you know, we're probably looking at the last season of James Jones in the Packers uniform. And you mentioned, you know, where would we be without James Jones? Well, Jared Aberderis wouldn't have been on the practice squad. He would have been on the active roster. And who knows how well he plays in the first 3 weeks of the season. So,
doesn't it suck to be Miles White?
Well, and, you know, Miles White was a guy, you know, it's like, okay, he's a great training camp body, but he was, to me, it was so frustrating that they kept him on the roster, but then obviously the second that, you know, they had an opportunity to get James Jones, because at that time when they had to make the roster decision at the end of preseason, James Jones had not been cut yet. So I think had he been cut sooner, I don't think Miles White ever makes the final roster, and you know, there's no story about how he finally cracked the 53, and it was James Jones all the way. I mean, Ride it as long as they can. You need a veteran in that mix, and if he's good enough and fast enough to do the job, keep him around. But you know how this team is. You know, they like their young guys.
I'm a big enough conspiracy theorist that I think there was stuff in the works even before he got cut, because I'm amazed how quickly James Jones got on an airplane that afternoon. Because, like, the final cuts were, like, not – the ink wasn't even drying. They're like, James Jones, boarding airplane for Green Bay.
he probably just got on a plane and said, whether there's a deal or not, I'll just go to Green Bay. And,
exactly.
And if there's no deal when I land, I'll just go show up at a sporting card store and sign autographs for a couple of hours. And then
make some money and go home. You mentioned, and I'm going to throw this to Annie as well. I'm going to start with Annie. You mentioned Jared Aberderis. He got called up to the big league this week. So is that a hint that Davante Adams is going to be out a bit? Are they not liking what they're seeing with Jeff Janis? Did he just need time to heal up, and they hit him on the practice squad? So what are people's thoughts about Jared Aberderis? I'll start with Annie.
Well, I think it's kind of all of the above. I think it's kind of a wake-up call to everybody who is out there saying, hey, you know, we've got other options out here, you know, available to us. And if Jared Aberderis is all that he's, you know, potentially capable of being, then he certainly could come into this team and make a difference. And so I don't even know with Jeff Janis. I mean, I know we've kind of joked about him here on the show, Janis said, but, I mean, you know, I feel like if Aberderis can live up to his potential, he could certainly jump up on the depth chart. It does make me a little bit worried about Davante Adams in terms of maybe there's something else going on there that we don't know about, or the high ankle sprain is far worse than we thought. I don't know. But I do think that with the kind of the receiving core that we're currently looking at, Aberderis has a real opportunity here, and I would love to see what he can do on the field.
So, Jason, what are your thoughts on Abby?
Well, I didn't even realize that he got on the field yesterday until I tweeted at Eric Upton, and he confirmed that he was on the punt coverage team. So, you know, my thought was if they're going to call him up and dress him and they're going to cut Bruce Gaston, who actually played last week against the Chiefs, that
Aberderis did get cut. That's who they did cut.
Gaston got cut. And so I thought, well, okay, if they're going to make that kind of a move, then, you know, if you're watching Monday Night Football, they're replaying the James Jones catch right now, by the way. ADD squirrel. So anyway, so.
I don't have a TV right now because my living room is torn up.
So my thought was that Aberderis is probably going to see a couple snaps on offense, but he didn't. So, I mean, all I can say is what everybody's already said about him, that he's a typical Packer type of guy. He's a hard worker. He's got, you know, a couple strokes of bad luck with the concussion and the knee injury last year. Rodgers really likes him, which is interesting because it just seems like it takes so much to get Aaron Rodgers' confidence in you as a receiver. But once you have it, you're golden. And it just he seemed to grab onto it right away. I mean, in training camp last year, before he even started in the preseason. So those two obviously had some sort of a connection. So, you know, in Rodgers, I trust. And so I think, you know, if he's throwing the ball, he'll probably make Jared Aberderis look as good as he possibly can as an NFL receiver. But I'm, you know, Kel, I'm kind of with you on this. I think that this probably implies that Davante Adams is going to be out for a little bit. I don't think we'll see him back until after the bye week. I mean, he can sit here and tell us it's not a high ankle or tell the media it's not a high ankle. It's just a regular ankle, which I would love a medical explanation on that. I know the difference between a high ankle and a typical ankle sprain, but
location of the sprain. So I won't beleaguer everyone with it with big long definition, but it's in a different location.
I loved how he dumbed it down and just said it's just a regular sprain. And I'm like, well, a sprain is a sprain, and you need either way, it hurts and it's not fun. So.
Since you're wondering, and regular ankles on the lateral side of your ankle, that's your garden variety ankle sprain. A high ankle sprain is between the two lower bones of the leg, so the tibia and the fibula, and it's what's kind of those two together down at the ankle. So it's a different location, and it's a longer healing time. It can be 4 to 6 weeks.
Right, and I totally get that, and that's why I think the Packers need to be smart here. And you know, it's not like they have an easy go at it. I mean, the Rams are a tough team. They play really good defense, and so they're going to need every weapon on offense they can have to score enough points to win. And then who knows with the Chargers. I mean, you know, so it's not like they have a layup coming up where they can just afford to rest him and you know, it's the Jaguars and the Browns coming to town. But, you know, he's going to miss a couple weeks. And so I think Aberderis, he's got to kind of work his way in on offense, I would think. It just seems like they're probably trying to just focus Janis on special teams. He just can't seem to get it done on offense. He just can't see the field. And at this point, I actually put it on. I'll put it on Janis. For a while, I was kind of getting down on Rodgers and saying, you know, he's not giving Janis a chance. He's being really hard on this kid. But at this point, I think there's some legitimacy to the fact that Janis can't see the lineup right, know the offense, know where he's supposed to be. I mean, he ran a terrible, terrible deep route against the Chiefs last week. I mean, he out of bounds. I mean, he ran so close to the sideline that there was no way he was going to make that catch. So I think this is Green Bay's way of saying, hey, we need somebody in here who can do some damage in that fourth receiver spot if we need to throw a fourth guy out there. And so we need to try Aberderis versus Janis. They're two completely different types of guys in terms of height, athleticism, speed, all that kind of stuff. But that's my take. You know, I think Aberderis will eventually start to ease his way into the offense.
Oh, I can't agree more. And I think I've never personally understood the shine on Jeff Janis. I think he's too wild, too unconditioned as far as his route, his execution. And I think a great example of why I'm not impressed with him was he could have easily been flagged for just, you know, hitting the guy fielding the punt who had fair caught it. You know,
all but
just plowed him over. It's like, oh, my God, for the love of God, don't touch him. And you know what? I think it was just at the mercy of that ref, because that ref had every right to throw a flag on that play because it was so incredibly stupid.
I'm going to flag you for stupid.
Well, no, I think he could have easily drawn the penalty because he touched him. You waive fair catch. You're not allowed to be touched at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what bugged
just about laid him out.
Well, and the thing that bugged me about that was the discipline there. It's like, okay, you're running full speed. I get it. You can't just stop on a dime. But you know if the receiver hasn't caught the ball yet and you get down there, which basically means Tim Mastay outkicked his coverage. I mean, I know that Jeff Janis is speedy as a gunner, and he's good. But you outkicked your coverage like that. So when you get down there, like, you got to give the receiver some room. And what worried me more was like, okay, I never hate to not see my team get flagged. You know, I mean, if play fair and you want things to go right, but if it's Micah Hyde on the other side of the coin and there's a guy that's right there on top of him like that, I'm ticked off. And so it's like, if they're not going to call Janis for that, that means that Micah Hyde is possibly going to face the same situation down the road, and they're not going to throw a flag on that guy either. And so how the hell is he supposed to hang on to the ball when you got a guy like down your shirt? I just, you know, that whole thing is, I mean, I like the fact that they let him play, but, and then on the next one, it looked like he did it again. I don't know if that was Janis, and it actually ended up being another 49ers player that ran into his own kick returner. But yeah, it's stuff like that where he always just seems to be around when there's issues. So where there's smoke, there's fire.
And honestly, a bonehead play like that, to me, you're sitting your butt on the bench and watching and learning. You know, you have no right being out there right then and there because you're just going to repeat that bonehead mistake. So let's change gears and talk about the defense. They're not that bad this year. So, Annie, some thoughts on the defense. What impressed you the most? What impressed you the least?
Well, I mean, Nick Perry, for starters. I mean, he had some impressive plays yesterday that I was really excited about, kind of seeing him come into his own a little bit. I mean, I don't remember when we drafted him a couple of years ago, I think it was, you know, but I've been kind of waiting on him to really start flashing, and I feel like he is. Obviously, Clay Matthews, I mean, he seemed like he was all over the place yesterday, and, you know, he was just really wreaking havoc on that offense, and so I was excited to see him really just come out, and I kind of see it as a hope of him really starting to own that inside linebacker position and say, hey, you know what, this is where I'm going to be, this is where they need me, and I'm going to come out and I'm going to, you know, kick butt at it. Not that he hasn't been trying in the past, but maybe starting to get the hang of it finally. And so I was really impressed with him. Obviously, as Jason mentioned before, the whole, you know, kicking the biceps and, you know, you know Russell Wilson, bro, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's such a nasty thing to do anyway. He's kind of a bro that way. But he was really fun to watch. I mean, I enjoyed it. And I think that our secondary, I think the defense as a whole just really, you know, sometimes they had the bend but don't break kind of deal going on. But I mean, the Niners scored 3 points. I mean, not that there's some kind of huge explosive offense at the moment, but anytime you can hold an NFL team to 3 points, you're definitely playing some very solid football. And Dom Capers is making some really good calls. So I love the defense, but I really particularly enjoy watching Nick Perry and Clay Matthews.
All right. So, Jason, what's your take on the defense? This is definitely not last year's defense. It seemed to screw up left and right.
Or 2013's defense or 2012's defense or 2011's defense, even though they went 15-1 and had to score 55 points a game to do it. So, yeah, so if defense wins championships, then I think there's a good chance if they keep playing the way that they're playing that this team will be back in San Francisco at some point. Between
oh, my
now
God,
and
don't curse us. Ah,
jinx. You jinxed it. Take it back.
I take it back.
By the way, we at the International House of Pocket are exceptionally superstitious, and
paranoid.
We have a rule here. You may not mention that game in February because then it would be our fault if they don't go.
All right. Okay. Well, I know you have an audience to, I know you have an audience to cater to, so I wanted to officially provide this week's throw the dishes at the wall moment. So, I mean that they're playing very well. You can't really complain. This is what we thought they should be doing for the last 5 or 6 years under Dom Capers. This is kind of what the 3-4 is supposed to be all about. And it sounds like, or it looks like, they finally have the talent all around to be able to send the different groups of guys in to do what they need to do. You know, the only thing I don't see a ton of, and this is a wrinkle that they can add in as the defense, the young defensive backs get more confident, is our blitzes from the DBs. And I think with Morgan Burnett being out, that's another factor as well. Because when Burnett's in there, he blitzes, ha-ha blitzes. Micah Hyde has been known to come in too, and Clay moving around just provides so much versatility. Offenses just seem kind of befuddled as far as what to do because, you know, one play he's dropping back into coverage, roam in the middle of the field. On the next play, he's running a stunt from the inside. On the next play, he's lined up outside, and you got Joe Thomas in there. And, you know, Joe Thomas, like, he looks like Darren Sproles out there. I'm like, who is this guy? Who's this defensive back wearing 41? I think he's 41, right? And I'm like, who is this guy? And it's like, it's Joe Thomas. He's an inside linebacker. Like, man, he must pack a lot of punch for his size because, you know, he's out on the field all the time. So the Packers just find these gems and these guys that can actually make plays. And that's the other big key is they're making the plays. Demaryius Randle is breaking up passes. Sam Shields is picking off. You know, he's getting interceptions. So, you know, ha-ha.
Where he was getting penalties last year. I think
right.
I think Sam is playing much cleaner ball this year.
Yeah, he's playing better. He's got the pieces around him. He knows he's got somebody, you know, over the top of him too, which allows him to kind of take some chances. Casey Hayward, I think we're all kind of realizing, you know, I think by the time the season's over with, I don't think we're going to see any more Casey Hayward on the outside. I think Demaryius Randle's going to take that spot over permanently by the end of the year. And then Casey Hayward will be your slot corner, which is not a demotion. If you're a nickelback on the Green Bay Packers defense, you are a starter because they play so much nickel. So it's not like it's a demotion.
I don't think it's a demotion. I think it's more of a playing to the best of your abilities. It's like,
right.
You know, ha-ha Quentin Dix, adding him to the mix made Morgan Burnett a better safety, and they moved him around. It's not that you're getting
right.
demoted. It's like, okay, your skill set's better in this position.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the Packers need to do is put the guys in the best spot to make plays. That's why Clay Matthews is playing inside linebacker. He's not an inside linebacker, but that's where they need him, and his skill set fits there. And so they put him there to make him more effective and help the team. He doesn't love it, but he's doing it. And then last but not least, I can't forget the guys up front. You know, Mike Daniels is playing out of his mind, and with every passing week, that's another couple million dollars that are
going
to have to hold for the salary cap next year, which is not a bad problem to have. And then B.J. Raji is another guy they're going to have to pay. He's on a one-year deal. So, you know, he's another guy who's playing for his deal. LaTroy Guyon's back. He didn't see much of him yesterday, but I mean, it was his first game back. He was on a pitch count. And then Dayton Jones even stepped in and made a play. So even though they lost Josh Boyd, who was never going to be a big, you know, contributor, I think he was more there for depth. The defensive line is actually getting into the backfield and controlling the line of scrimmage and attacking well at the point. There's stuff in running backs in the backfield. You know, they're all doing well. The only issue I had yesterday, and had he not almost gotten an interception and kind of atoned for himself at the beginning of the game, was Nate Palmer. I thought Nate Palmer missed a couple big tackles early in the game, and that's something that's been so frustrating about this defense the last few years is they get to the ball carrier in the backfield, they've got a chance to bring him down and get off the field, and then they let him slip away, and he ends up picking up another 6 or 7 yards. So, I mean, these guys still have a ways to go, but they're getting pretty good production out of him. You guys mentioned Nick Perry. You know, he's 2 sacks yesterday. Everybody's stepping up and playing well. That's what they're going to need, because if the offense is going to have an off day and teams start kind of figuring out Aaron Rodgers and how to slow him down a little bit, defense just needs to keep the opposition under 20, and the Packers have a chance to win any game.
So I referenced Major League as well yesterday on some horrible missed tackle by Clay Matthews. I said, what is with this Ole BS? So, yeah, so now we're back to the top of the show where we've been in that. No one got the reference. It's when Willie McKay is shouting 10 seconds to this minute. It's like,
I was on
none of this Ole BS.
I was on mute and busting you guys. I'm like, oh, she can't hear me.
Okay. See, it's the top of the hour. We are falling apart, and just on cue. So, yeah, we're playing on the Rams next week, who beat the Cardinals last night, which really I think surprised everybody. So, quickly around the horn, Annie. Now that you're off mute, what do you think is going to be happening next week?
Well,
it is throwback weekend, I do believe.
No, it's throwback weekend when we play the Chargers.
Oh, it's
Chargers.
The weekend. Oh, that's right.
It was weekend. Yes. I hope it's on this weekend. Because I'm going to be in Grand Marais, and I'd be very sad if I all of a sudden realized I was missing throwback weekend. No.
Yeah, okay. Wally and Kyle, I'm sorry. It's not this weekend. It's next weekend.
Yeah. It is next weekend. Get your tickets at throwbackweekend.com. Okay. So this game, I don't know. I haven't really done a lot of research into the Rams, but I do know that they've got an impressive defense. And so, you know, I'm really, really hoping that they continue the trend of helping Barkley out, you know, pulling somebody, whether it's a tight end or whatever, to help him out a little bit, because I definitely don't want to see Aaron get mowed over. In the end, though, I still think he's coming on top. Their offense leaves something to be desired for sure, and I think that our defense, with the way they've been playing, should have no issues with taking care of business. So I'm going to predict 23-13.
All right, fair enough, Jason.
I don't know. I guess did the rules on predictions on this show change? I think when I was running the board last time, I missed a cue. Anyway, so the Rams. Well, and Jay was around back then too, so I don't know. Maybe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we always blast over Jay's prediction.
Yeah, he doesn't get predictions.
Right, no, he does. He doesn't, and that's why you know I had to twist his arm on No Huddle Radio, and that's one of the reasons why No Huddle Radio may be still on hiatus. I am so, but all right, so
we sold Jay from No Huddle Radio. Sorry, Al, but we also sold Jason, so world domination is ours.
Well, I pulled myself. You know, I pulled myself. Once we lost Burkles, it was like, okay, we're not going to be able to do this every week and be as entertaining as we can be. So we'll have to figure it out. I mean, with the guys we have over there were great. What it came down to was just scheduling. We just couldn't get our schedules together, and so that show
it
just
kind of
went by the
way. It's also helped that I had the big sister privilege of you're on our show now.
Yes, right. Well, you know, you gotta pull rank, right? So the Rams, you know what's funny about the Rams is that they're not a bad team. You know, I wasn't that surprised they beat the Cardinals. You gotta remember, I live in Arizona, so I have Cardinals, you know, coverage shoved in my face every day. And while they're a great team and a good defense and everyone loves Carson Palmer and he hasn't lost since Nixon was in office as a starter, I mean, they do have some holes on their team. So it's not like they're this major juggernaut that can't be defeated. I mean, I still think if the Packers came in here, even if it was in Arizona, I still think they could beat the Cardinals. So the Rams have a good defense. And it doesn't, but you know, it's still the St. Louis Rams. So the last, I feel like we played them 3 or 4 years in a row. And wasn't this always kind of the game where everybody was like, hey, who do they have next week after a big win? And it was like, oh, they play the Rams. And you were just kind of like, oh. You know, just kind of like, oh. There wasn't really a whole lot to it. You don't really think about the Rams much. You don't really seem to know a whole lot about them. They're kind of the forgotten team in the NFC West. So, you know, the one thing that's scary about that is that they do have an amazing defensive line. So they're going to be able to get after Rodgers with just rushing four, which tends to be the games that the Packers offense struggles with the most. Like against the Bills last year, it was the same thing. You know, if they're able to get pressure with four, they can drop all the other guys into coverage, and then your receivers are all doubled up, and it's hard to find somebody to throw to. And we all know who's at right tackle. So that's another problem right there, is that it's Don Barkley on the right-hand side. So how are you going to keep this active defensive line off of Aaron Rodgers? So I don't know whether we can expect this thing to become a shootout, because it's just two really good defenses and the offense gets the better of them, or if this ends up being one of those games that ends like 10-3. No, I have no idea what to expect. The only thing I can hang my hat on is that it's at Lambeau Field. The Packers are great at home. And they're playing too good of football right now. I don't think there's any way that I don't know what the score is going to be exactly, but I don't think the Packers are going to lose this one at home. They'll find a way to get it done. Nick Foles is just not as good, and Rodgers, after the performance he had yesterday, even though they won the game, all he has to do is read one article that said he was average, and he'll just get pissed off and come out and throw 6 touchdowns, and he'll end up with a -10 grade on Pro Football Focus, and everything will be all good again.
He's Woo-hoo! Such a sensitive little thing, isn't he?
He is. It's adorable.
The fact that he isn't, like, salty, you know, somewhere along the line yesterday, he's like, hey, guys, you want to know what? They're all like, yeah, we know they didn't pick you. Yeah, you know, he said it
Thanks,
so many
Jeff.
Times. They're like, yeah, we know, number 24, blah, 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 cry me a river. So, we should probably cheer up the music. I agree with Jason. I think it's probably going to be a low-scoring game. It's going to be the battle of the defenses, much like what happens when the Bears come to Green Bay. When it's two defenses against each other, unlike this year when the Bears really suck. That said, I really don't want to lose to Napoleon Dynamite, and I don't have anything intelligent to say. So I'm Kelly, he's Jason, he's Annie, and there are the credits just for you, Jay. Roll time.
Roll the credits.
Roll the credits.
Roll the credits.
Roll the credits. We love you, Jay. You are a weenie for not showing up tonight.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barkley, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.